I'm a graduate student at Virginia Tech. I'm here to present the first year results from a greenhouse study. And we're looking at the effects of logging residue, fertilization, and genetics on carbon balance. This study complements a larger field study that's taking place in Somerville, South Carolina, and that's a cooperation between the U.S. Forest Service and Mead Westvaco. So a lot of the treatments that we chose in this study were to help make those connections between these two. A little bit of background information. The carbon pools and fluxes that we're going to be interested in are looking at the amount of carbon that is captured and stored in the form of biomass, both above and below ground, and then that carbon that's lost. So we're going to be looking in this study at two directions of loss. One in the form of CO2 from soil respiration, and then all carbon that's lost through leaching. So we have the field study, and we've tried to bring it into a greenhouse. So we created these large pots that we fitted with nozzles so we could control all the moisture that comes out of the pots so we could get a good feel for how much carbon is being lost by that direction. So our general questions that we wanted to ask, just the simple question is, how are these treatments, logging residue incorporation and fertilization, how are they going to affect these different pools and fluxes? And more specifically, the logging residue that we're going to incorporate after 1 year, how much of that logging residue is going to remain within that soil? We don't actually have the numbers at this point, the soil carbon values, but we do have values for total carbon loss through the leachate and carbon lost in the form of soil respiration. And then by mass balance, we can kind of infer how much of that would remain within. Specific question number two, what are the effects of fertilization on these pools and fluxes? So we fertilized with nitrogen and phosphorus, and we wanted to see how that's going to impact these different fluxes specifically. And then finally, we have two different clones that are represent genotypes that will allocate carbon differently, or at least we expected them to. And we want to see what impact two clones that kind of fit on opposite ranges, although they're both considered superior clones, how that would impact these pools as well. So to get into the methods quickly, this was a greenhouse study. We utilized 48 170 liter pots, and it was conducted over a 1 year period. We did it at ambient temperature, so we opened up the greenhouse, allowed it to undergo a winter, and we tried to mimic as best we could conditions in South Carolina. So we let the temperature drop down. We tried to hold it at 40 degrees, but at night with those greenhouses, it got a little bit lower than that. But we did as best we could to mimic those. Each container was filled with about 2/10 of a cubic meter of Eunola series soil. This soil was taken from the coastal plain of Virginia. And this soil was chosen because it's what we could get to best complement the soil that's on the site. Probably no surprise to most of you, but it was to me since I'm kind of new to working in the Southeast. Transporting 20 tons of soil that's infested with fire ants up to Blacksburg, Virginia isn't exactly really the way to go. So we had to go from soil that was within Virginia and bring it over. So. The experimental design was a completely randomized block design. It was replicated 6 times, and our treatments were arranged in a full 2x2x2 factorial. Treatment one was logging residue, and either we incorporated it or we didn't. The logging residue that we collected was composted loblolly pine harvest residue from South Carolina. So we went down, brought back enough that we could put on a rate of equivalent to 25 metric tons per hectare oven dried. So that was incorporated into each pot. And fertilization was the second treatment. And again, either it was fertilized or it wasn't fertilized. And it was fertilized on 2 occasions. We had to fertilize in July in the first year. And that was just due to the plants weren't moving as far along as we wanted them to. So it was July before they got to the point where we felt we could fertilize and get some good information from it. And we fertilized in the form of diammonium phosphate and ammonium nitrate at a rate of 200 kilograms N and 50 kilograms P per hectare. It was then fertilized again the following spring with just nitrogen at a rate of 200 kilograms then. And then the two clones we used were donated by Mead West FACO, and clone 85 and clone 93. Our hypothesis at the time, or what we were told, was clone 93, even though both are considered superior clones, clone 93 would be the one that would allocate more to stem biomass, so it would carry less leaf area and have more of its carbon going into producing merchantable material. Measurements. We measured soil respiration continuously using the automated carbon exchange system. This was a open system infrared gas analyzer developed by the U.S. Forest Service. They allowed us to borrow it for the year. We were able to collect the leachate monthly, so we opened up the spigots once a month, collected all the water that came out. For about within 24 hours, that water was subsampled. Those subsamples were frozen, and then we measured the rest of the water volume and discarded it. That leachate was then sent off to NC State, where it was measured for total or total carbon, so both the inorganic and the organic. And then we measured biomass above and below ground by destructive harvest at the end of the study. So get into the results. A little explanation on the graph. The red is logging residue treatments, the blue, no logging residue, and total soil CO2 efflux. So we're looking at a flux rate of micromoles of CO2 per meter squared per second on the y-axis. We had a highly significant treatment by date interaction. Although the main effect was also highly significant, so it never flip-flopped, but the differences between the two treatments did differ between this over the course of the year. So early on after incorporation, differences were quite high. We go into the winter months where it's just cold and those differences disappear, and then those differences reemerge again the following spring, but not to the same degree that they were early on in the study. So logging residue did increase total efflux, and that's not too surprising. We put this readily available source of carbon below ground. Microbes are going to feast on it, release a lot of it. Total CO2 efflux decreased when fertilization was added. This was a pretty highly significant significant effect. And then we had a slightly significant clonal effect. So clone 93 produced higher total efflux than clone 85, and that was at the 0.07 p-value. So looking at the concentration of carbon within the leachate, the only one that was significant was the logging residue treatment. And we found early on that logging residue increased carbon loss through the leachate, but that that effect actually disappeared by the end of the study and returned to control levels. And then again, there were no effects due to fertilization, no effects between clones, and no interactions either. And then volume, there was no effect of logging residue or clone on above ground or below ground volume. We were pretty surprised because we were expecting clone 93 to have greater above ground volume, which it actually had less, although the difference is not significant. And then, not surprisingly, we had a typical fertilizer effect on above ground biomass. So we have an increase in above ground and a slight increase, although not significant, in below ground biomass. So to summarize the results, to explain this a little bit, what we did is each pool and flux is labeled with an amount of grams of carbon either gained or lost. So the difference is between the logging residue and the control treatment. So when you see plus 159 grams of carbon, that was in addition to the baseline control. So to answer question number one, the first year after this logging residue was incorporated below ground, 93% of that carbon was still there at the end of the year. So we incorporated about 4.5 kilograms of organic matter, and then just using 50% carbon of that organic matter, it was 2,460 grams of carbon went in, and then In excess of what was in control levels, we saw a 59% increase in soil respiration and no change in leaching. The effects of fertilization on carbon retention, we saw that fertilizer increased both above and below ground biomass by 18%. And we saw kind of a double whammy effect. Not only did you increase the amount of biomass being stored on the site, but you decreased the rate at which that organic matter or that soil respiration is leaving, or CO2 is leaving the site. So we saw an 11% decrease, which is equivalent to 37 grams of carbon less in fertilized than control. And again, no change in leaching. And then the clone effect, we saw no difference in above or below ground biomass, so carbon storage on the site in the form of biomass was no different. But there was a difference in the rate of soil respiration. So we saw a 19% increase in clone 93 over clone 85. And we believe that that increase is due to, although there was no difference in the amount of below ground biomass, the coarse to fine root ratio was quite different, with clone 93 having quite a bit more fine roots. And we think that that might have contributed to this increase. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge everybody that's contributed to this research. And I'll take any questions that you have. So. Yes.
So why did the soil respiration decline
with fertilization? Another portion of this study is to try to get at that reason, whether it's a difference in the more long term, whether it's difference in carbon and nitrogen ratio, whether it's a difference in carbon being allocated below ground. So if you fertilize, those plants could allocate more above and less below. Or if there's a difference in pH immediately after putting this, these fertilizer salts down. Or just a direct effect on microbial populations. We're not sure, but we're doing more to try to sort out what might be driving this difference. Yeah?
What would the CN ratio of your long
incubation? We haven't gotten it back yet, but it's quite high. We've sent it off to the lab and haven't received the results yet.
So what do you base your
application on? The nitrogen fertilizer application. We were looking at 200 kilograms of N, just putting on what would be fertilized in a typical harvesting situation or a plantation situation. But the second dose of nitrogen was to try to see an effect later on as well, to see which direction it, whether we could recreate that effect, or maybe if we caused any immobilization, if we could maybe overcome that immobilization. So.
One more quick question?
Yes.
Do you have any plans to look at carbon exudates in the rhizosphere and to tease apart the issue of the tunnel difference?
I would love to. I don't have, personally, while I'm at Virginia Tech, I don't have plans to do that work. But with the leachate that we collected, we had the ability to measure it for organic acids, but that's as close as we could come. And that, again, is going to be coming through soil as well as what would be. So no, actually getting at what's being exudated into the rhizosphere, we don't have that ability.